Welcome, Jimmy.
Hi. It's a pleasure to be in this beautiful facility.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I mean, I don't even know where to start in talking about your accomplishments down through the years in terms of writing songs. I mean, just to mention just a very few, and these are songs that I used to hear on Top 40 radio when I was younger, was Up, Up and Away, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, also Wichita Lineman, Galveston, MacArthur Park, just to barely scratch the surface. And I know you've been writing songs and recording albums, winning awards, and being involved for decades. In fact, you have a new album that just came out this week, if I'm not mistaken, called Still Within the Sound of My Voice. And you were telling me it's number one on Amazon.
Well, I'm a little bit proud of that. I'm very rarely in that position, so who knows? It could last for 24 hours or so. But the actually response to that record has been really, really just overwhelming so far, and in large part due to the fact that we have on board Carly Simon, we have Crosby and Nash, we have Joe Cocker, we have Lyle Lovett, we have Rumor or Sarah Joyce, if you prefer, Amy Grant, Mark Cohen. We have so many people who came in, and it's just a labor of love. Nobody's getting paid a lot of money for doing this, as you know.
So were you friends with all these folks?
Yeah, there's a personal connection with each person. This started on the album Just Across the River,
which was your previous album, right?
Yeah, and they're definitely set pieces. I mean, they're both done in Nashville. They're both done with the same, with Jerry Douglas and a crowd of just superlative Nashville musicians. And a lot of our preparation just simply goes into scheduling to make sure that we can get the right guys in the right room at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two albums are kind of linked, and the performers are linked to the one of the first persons who approached me before this idea of duets, if you will, it was even in the air, because we were just going to make a Nashville album and that was it. But Lucinda Williams said, "Could I please? You think I could sing with you on Galveston?" And I said, "Not while I'm alive, no." And I said, "Well, yeah, why do you want to do that?" She said, "Well, because my mother taught it to me when I was a little girl." So I went, "Oh, God, that hurts." But she came in. Lucinda did the first one. And then it was just like it was like a deluge. The gates opened, and people just came. Billy Joel sang Wichita Lineman with me. Mm-hmm. And we had a ball. It was all about the joy of making records.
So did you have like a small number of long sessions or did you have just a lot of short ones? One artist came in at a time?
No, we did the classic Nashville song, tracking sessions where we did 14 tracks in 2 days. And there were times when I was just standing behind the board with tears running down my face, because I could not believe what these guys were, what they were able to generate,
mm-hmm.
in such an economical way. Because we came out of an era where artists spent millions of dollars on records and they multi-tracked and they went for years, mm-hmm. and years and at the end of it they still weren't quite sure what they had. And here, this was the original thing where people just went in the studio and played music. The post-production got pretty involved at times because all the people who are on these albums are busy and successful, and so that makes it hard to really get everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It took us a while to find a place for Jackson Browne on the first album because he tours so much. On this album, I ended up sending the tracks up to Carly Simon on the Vineyard, and she worked on her own tracks up there. So we're actually not making any false claims here. I was in the studio all day long with Lyle Lovett, which was just crazy, wonderful experience. Never really met him before, and I'm speechless because he turned out to be such a swell guy.
Yeah, he was here on Tuesday.
Yeah, I could feel him.
We're talking with songwriter and singer Jimmy Webb, who has a new album out called "Still Within the Sound of My Voice." Would you like to do a tune off of it?
Yeah, I tell you what I'd like to do. One of my favorite cuts on the album was the Crosby, Nash cut. They came in, they did a song that has been around for a few years, but I like to think that we did one of the nicest versions of it on this record. It's called "If These Walls Could Speak." These old walls, if these old walls could speak, things that they remember well, parties and people raising hell, a couple in love living week to week, rooms full of laughter, if these old speak. If hallowed halls, if hallowed halls could talk, these would have a tale to tell of sun going down. Tell you that I'm sorry for being cold and blind and weak. They would tell you that it's only that I have a little bit of a stubborn streak. Yes, I do, darling. If these walls could speak. If these old walls could speak.
Jimmy Webb is our guest. He's live in Studio 1A. And that's a tune that he wrote called If These Walls Could Speak. And it appears on his brand new release, Still Within the Sound of My Voice. And on the album, David Crosby and Graham Nash sing along with him. Is there a story to that song?
Well, the song is a story in the sense that it really started out as a song about an old house that my wife and I lived, my ex-wife, regrettably, but old house that we lived in that was a post-Civil War planner's house that we lived where we lived in New Jersey, and it was one of these old, almost a Southern style home with two big double parlors in front, and a staircase, and all these big windows looking out, and a big porch wrapped around. And I used to sit and think a lot about how many people had lived in that house and how many little footsteps had been, you know, pitter-pattered up and down the staircase. And I think that we all have wondered about that at times, who will come and live where we have lived and who has lived there before. So I started writing about a physical place, and when I got over to the last verse and I got into that chorus and said, they would tell you that I owe you more than I could ever pay. All of a sudden I realized I'm not singing about a house anymore. I'm singing about myself. I'm singing about the walls that I've put up to interrupt free and easy communication in my own relationship, in my own life. And so the physical walls, somehow or other, while I was writing the song, they had morphed into philosophical walls. And that was quite a trip, because I didn't start down that road. It's just somewhere. It's a case of a song taking you somewhere.
Does that happen often when you write songs?
Hopefully, it happens often enough, because I think that's really where the great songs are. That's the territory where they lie. So hopefully, you start off with a good idea anyway. And I like to think, well, the least that's going to happen is I'm going to come out of this with a halfway decent song. But you always pray for the miracle, for that twist, for that turn that's going to open up another universe in there somewhere.
Jimmy Webb is our guest today, live in Studio 1A on KUTX 98.9. He plays at the One World Theater tonight. Well, you grew up in Southwest Oklahoma.
Well, actually, technically, I grew up in West Texas. I was from age 4 to about 12. I was in, 11. I was in West Texas. My father's a Baptist ministry, pastored in a little place called Ludi, pastored in Wellington, pastored in Pampa. He went to seminary in Wichita Falls. Mm. And when I was around 11 years old, we moved back into Oklahoma, really just across the state line to El Dorado. Mm-hmm. And in fact, two of my sisters are Texans. They were born in Quanah.
Wow. So you made it out to Southern California, kind of on the exurban part of Los Angeles, and then at a really early age started having people having hit records on your songs. So what was it like coming from Oklahoma, Texas, and what had to be a conservative family, and all of a sudden you find yourself in the late 1960s in Los Angeles, kind of being the almost the toast of the town in terms of songwriters?
Well, I always wanted to be a songwriter. There was never any ambiguity about that. I wanted to be like that. What I had in mind was more of the Burt Bacharach, Hal David model. what I like to call now pure songwriters, which hardly exist anymore, because so many songwriters perform their own material. And in the age of the singer-songwriter, it was like a tsunami. Of course, there have always been singer-songwriters. I hasten to add, because the Delta blues men were singer-songwriters. But the so-called singer-songwriter of the late 60s, early 70s, that was an era that really alienated a lot of pure songwriters who had just been turning out material for other artists for years. And on the other hand, it was rough going for pure singers who had always sung great songs, because there was a seemingly endless supply of them. And now all of a sudden, all of that delicate relationship was threatened by this new thing, singer-songwriter. I remember the first time I heard Carole King's Tapestry, and I looked at a girlfriend I had at the time, and I said, well, I'm going to have to start singing, you know, because it was a very interesting experience, because I became well known, if you will, notorious, for being a songwriter, not for being a singer.
Right.
And I was probably one of the last people in my generation to gain a reputation as a songwriter before that curtain came down. If you look around you today, you won't see very many young people who are famous for being songwriters. Mm. They'll be famous for a lot of things, including songwriting, but not just songwriting.
Right.
It was heady stuff. It was very intoxicating, and to say that I had absolute control of it would be to lie to you.
Yeah, because you were on quite a roll back then. I mean, there were people putting out albums of completely your songs. And I remember, you know, I knew who Jimmy Webb was because of the songs. I mean, you were constantly mentioned in terms of that was a Jimmy Webb song.
Well, I was lucky that way. Mr. Sinatra would mention me live on stage in Las Vegas and mention me on a couple of live albums. Glenn Campbell, who shared Mr. Sinatra's passion for songwriters, always mentioned me when he did my songs in a show. And
is it true that the first time you met Glenn Campbell, he told you to get a haircut?
He sure did. he didn't exactly tell me to get a haircut. He said, when you gonna get a haircut, is what he said. He claims that he did not say that, but as a matter of fact, he did say that.
I assume that you became pretty close friends.
Very, very close. He was, in my life, very much like what Dionne Warwick was to Burt Bacharach and Hal David. He was my messenger to the masses, you know. Mm-hmm. And with that big 5-octave range, and just the sheer musicianship of the man was on a genius, and is on a genius level. He still walks through the house and picks up a guitar and just racks it, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, just plays like 45 seconds or 60 seconds of the most outrageous stuff you ever heard in your life, and then kind of puts it down and goes mm-hmm. and does something else. But he's still very much a musician to this day. It's just part of his DNA. It's part of his being. Mm-hmm. And it's still a very great pleasure for me when I drive along the road sometimes and flip on Sirius Radio or something, and or NPR, and
thank you,
and hear a Wichita Lineman, and the record sounds great. I think it always will sound great. And I think it was just a match. It was just a very, very fortunate match. If not made in heaven, then, you know, maybe made in a much lower altitude. But It was definitely meant to be that he and I would hook up, and we both benefited from it. I think that he sings my songs extremely well. But I have to add that he sung Johnny Hartford's songs very well. He sung Alan Toussaint's songs very well. He could sing anything, man. I heard him sing the soliloquy from Carousel. He used to do that in his act up in Vegas. And I don't think anybody ever did that any better either.
We're speaking with Jimmy Webb, who has a new album out, Still Within the Sound of My Voice. And we're fortunate to have him here live in Studio 1A on KUTX 98.9. And you have an opportunity to hear him sing his songs tonight. He'll be out at the One World Theater. Is there a particular song in your vast oeuvre that comes to mind, or that's a particular favorite of yours that you'd like to play for the folks?
Well, we were just talking about Glenn, and on the first album of this kind of this set of records, Just Across the River, there were a couple historical performances. One of them was probably Linda Ronstadt's last recording, which is in no way a cause for celebration. It's one of the saddest things in the world I could possibly say, but it is there, and I'm so glad that we got her into the studio, and we did this recording with her. There's also a historic performance, because Glenn and I, in all the years we worked together, which was 30 or 40. We never sang together on a record. And on the first, on Just Across the River, we actually cut By the Time I Get to Phoenix together. And I might add that it's very easy to tell who the singers are and who the songwriters are on that record. But I'd like to do this thing for Glenn and I. For Glenn. This is for you, buddy. By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. She'll find the note that I left hanging on her door. She'll laugh when she reads the part that says I'm leaving. Oh, I've left that girl too many times, too many times. Albuquerque, she'll be working. She'll probably stop at lunch. She'll try to give me a call. Oh, but she'll just hear that empty phone keep on ringing. Oklahoma, she'll be sleeping. She'll turn softly and she'll call. She'll call my name out loud. Oh, she will cry just to think I'd really leave her.
time and time again, you know. I try to tell that woman so.
I get to Phoenix. Quite a timeless tune sung by the man who wrote it, Jimmy Webb, live here in Studio 1A, KUTX 98.9. So I have to ask you, was that a song you just pulled out of the air, or does it come from some personal experience?
Well, I knew the young lady quite well, and somebody said to me the other day, well, wow, you know, you were lucky to get a couple of songs out of that breakup. And I said, are you kidding me? You mean a couple of albums? I mean, if I'm going to go through a full-on breakup, I want at least, you know, a couple of dozen songs out of it.
Well, that one's for one for the ages, that's for sure.
Oh, thank you very much. You know, it means a lot to me, too.
Jimmy Webb has been our guest. He has a brand new album out called Still Within the Sound of My Voice, which came out this week. And you can catch him on his one night in Austin. He'll be at the One World Theater this evening. Jimmy, thanks so much for coming and sharing your music and your stories. And you know, we can sit here for hours and talk if we had the time. Casey Cheeks has been our engineer. Thanks, Casey. I'm Jay Trachtenberg. I'll be around till 3 o'clock right here on your public radio station, KUTX 98.9, bringing you the Austin Music Experience.